From the Seven Feathers Casino Studio, KQEN weather in the Umpqua Valley, 30% chance of showers. Cloudy, gradually becoming sunny, and a high of 52. Slight chance of showers tonight, clear and cold, getting down to 27. On Thursday, sunny and 57. Looking ahead, Friday, partly sunny, 64. Then rain likely beginning on Saturday in the Umpqua Valley. Right now, 48 degrees. KQEN News Time, 1235.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here. Another look at a look back, essentially, at the recently adjourned session of the Oregon State Legislature and State Representative Cedric Hayden on. Good afternoon. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you, Kyle. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. As you are aware, it's been a whirlwind of activity up there at the legislature. We did wrap things up a couple of days early from our deadline here last Friday, and have some reports on some of the things that I particularly worked on up there.
Well, I'm curious, first of all, maybe give us an overview of how those 32 days went.
Slow. I guess what I would say from, you know, just kind of grinding along there as we went through the process, as people may not be aware, in long sessions, we don't have a limit to the bills that we can introduce there, which I think there should be a limit, but there's not. But in the short session, we're limited to two bills each, and there are additional committee bills. And so there's not the huge volume, and of course, the short session, my opinion, was designed for budget stuff. So we did a lot of budget stuff, but we did do some policies there. There was a change in leadership on the House, and I'll say it was more sedate, if you will, less controversial as we went through the process with the leadership change that we had there in the Speaker's office.
So if you take a look at everything that happened from your perspective of legislation, what were some of the top accomplishments?
So I've had the honor to serve there for almost 8 years once I finish out this term. And one of the things that I've had the responsibility of is in healthcare policy. There's a lot to do with that, from COVID as the vice chair. But we tend to write bills in areas that we have some expertise. And so I've been trying to get our veterans. We have a large community of veterans, particularly in House District 7 that I have the honor to represent. Some oral health care. A lot of people may or may not realize that are very few veterans, only about 15% of our veterans have any oral health care coverage. And this is something that I've been working on for the last 8 years and finally got unanimous support and approval through the House and the Senate to have a program started for our veterans to get a basic health care coverage if they're under 400% of the federal poverty level. And some funding will come from that from general fund, and some funding will come from that from the lottery fund, Measure 96, that was passed about a decade ago. And so I'm really proud of that one to help our veterans out with that. And another one, my other chief sponsor bill that I dropped, was working with getting a continuity of reciprocity licensure for nonprofit or non-compensated care. That's a fancy word to say get more volunteers in the healthcare space to provide free healthcare through non-government funded healthcare access.
Now, you mentioned the two-bill limit. I'm curious, we talked to Floyd Przanski this morning, and he felt like even two bills was too many bills coming in for a short session. He thought there should be one. What's your perspective?
I'd be happy with one. The smaller the workload in a short session, the better. I'd be an advocate for one. The Senate did used to have one. They changed the rules to go to two, kind of match up with the House. And so you got 90 bills plus committee bills plus agency bills. And so it's still a lot going through there in a short session. I'd be really supportive of making that less and strongly supportive of limiting the bills in the long session also.
What about legislation you wished wouldn't have passed?
Well, there's a lot of legislation that went through in the budget cycle, and there's some points in there that I wasn't really excited about seeing. But one of the big controversial issues that people heard about was with our farming community, and it's the way that Oregon is structuring overtime compensation for our farm labor workers. And we were looking for some amendments into that bill, and I wasn't a lead on that bill, but we were looking for some amendments into that bill that would make our farmers in Oregon more competitive with other states. So Oregon will be one of, I believe, 8 states that adopt some stricter rules there than other states have. And so that was a contentious point that I thought that we could have come to a better compromise on.
And what about other things that you weren't real happy about?
Well, there was one bill that I was really unhappy about, and that was 1529. And what that bill did is it expands the authority for executive order, basically to call, you know, a pandemic crisis or what they termed a healthcare crisis by an administrative level. Twice removed from the governor, meaning that a public health director would have been able under this bill to call for, the executive order power of making a public health crisis and doing edicts, if you will, on it. So we really worked hard. I gave courtesy notice to my chair that I would be serving a minority report on that and worked on that bill a lot. And we were able to reverse that bill. So in the end, the bill actually did pass. Of course, it's still tagged with the same number, but we were able to. So that was a victory from our side to where those executive orders can't be expanded. Of course, I was also trying to get it back to the legislature to review it. So that was one that we were actually able to correct with a lot of hard work there in the legislature.
What about the level of cooperation with the two parties? We've seen a lot of sessions recently where that's really dissolved. Did it go better because of the format of the short session?
You know, I would say that it went better this time around, and I think that was just, you know, some fresh eyes, and we did a process to make sure that we knew what was happening as far as the legislative process of reading bills for all of the House bills. So our leadership had us read the House bills on the House floor right in the last couple of days. The Senate bills came over, some of them came over, and we didn't read those in entirety. But at that point, the last 2 days of the session, it had been baked into what was coming forward and what wasn't coming forward. So I think it all went pretty well. We spent a little more time up there. We were more deliberate about the process, So it was less contentious than we've seen other sessions.
I know as press releases came out, especially late in the session from both sides of the aisle, a lot of money clearly went out the door in the session. Should all of that money been doled out, or should some of it have gone back to the taxpayers?
Well, I'm always a strong advocate for the kicker, and there will be a kicker. A lot of these funds that we, you know, so the even though they try and trim money off of that through some budgeting tactics and moving money around, what they call the color of money, we are looking at the last 2 cycles to have a kicker. So we have been able to substantially hold the line on that and keep that in place. A lot of these funds are what they call the ARPA funds, or the American Recovery Fund through the COVID. And so the billions of dollars that basically got allocated, many of those came from the ARPA funds that Oregon received. An example of some of that stuff that I worked with in Lane County, like the McKinsey River School District needed a new roof. So I worked with Senator Floyd Perzanski, and we got matching funds of $250,000 apiece. That's an example of that. Umpqua Community College, we were able to, through ARPA funds, provide $200,000 to their CDL or to their technical training there. And a couple of other legislators joined me on that to increase that amount for the scholarships, Glide Revitalization, $150,000, and United Community Action Network, $250,000. So a lot of those funds were ARPA funds that wouldn't been available for a kicker or a reimbursement. They were federal funds. And so we ended up allocating that. I was also able through this session to allocate just slightly under $3 million towards our special districts, which will be going out over the next couple of years through a grant program that we're setting up. And these are like our local fire districts, libraries, sanitation districts, that largely got bypassed in the ARPA funds. And so I wanted to try and drive some of those funds that I had the ability to do that to the local community level.
All right, more when we come back with State Representative Cedric Hayden. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 inside Douglas County, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248. Lars Larson coming at 1. A reminder, we have the Oregon Duck game, a Pac-12 conference game against Oregon State, coming up at 2. So no Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show. And we'll see how the timing goes as to whether we have a partial, a full, or perhaps not an afternoon report at 5, depending on how long that game goes. On tomorrow's Inside Douglas County, Democratic candidate for Governor Tobias Reed will be with us. We're talking with State Representative Cedric Hayden, looking at the recently concluded session of the legislature. You mentioned for the House a difference with wrapping things up with a newer speaker. And I'm curious, while you're in one chamber and he's in the other, if you had any thoughts about Senate President Peter Courtney kind of concluding his time, at least during sessions.
Well, he's been there, you know, in that building, 36 years or something like that, an awful long time. I'm not sure if that number's accurate, but between his time in the House and as the president of the Senate, he's been there an awful long time. And so a lot of institutional knowledge there, but I'm, you know, looking forward to a new era there. I have joined the effort there on the to bring some balance to the landscape of Oregon's politics, to aspire to go to the Senate. And there will be a new leadership in the Senate when I get there. I certainly hope that we have control of those gavels, but that's something that we'll be working on very diligently, you know, through this election cycle.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You are now a candidate for the Senate district there in the area. Explain the reasons why you wanted to go that direction.
So through the redistricting process, there's been a lot of changes in all of our districts, not just the one that I represent. As folks may be aware of, I've had the honor to represent for the last four terms. Northern Eastern Douglas County is kind of how we term it, but it does go all the way down to Diamond Lake, a very large area in Douglas County, and goes up to the Lane County, Douglas County line, and then the eastern part, mostly I-5, east of that. So I've had the opportunity to represent that. When they did redistricting, they generally moved all those districts north, so the House district that I would represent now, if I continued on there, would be changed to a number 12, which again is mostly East Douglas County, expanded in some areas. But there became an opportunity when the dust settled on that. The Senate district 6, which is mostly the Lane County portion that I've represented in the past, and then they've added Linn County in there, the other side of the House district, became a district that didn't have a current sitting senator in it, known as an open district, meaning they combined Floyd Prozaski and Senator Beyer, where they live, into a single district, and Beyer's retiring. So there was three of these districts that were open seats throughout the state. And I filed for that early on when we were allowed, which was delayed with the redistricting, and worked really hard to get our message out that we'd be running for that. Of course, during session, we don't really have time to campaign too much during that period of time, and then we'll be back out on the campaign trail going forward. But just the 8th was the filing deadline. So all of the candidates are now filed and announced, and our public record of who's running. And I do have not a primary challenge, but I do have a general election challenge, and we're going to work hard to bring some balance to the Senate on that side of things in the future.
As you mentioned, the deadline passed yesterday. With things all set, as you look at the Secretary of State's list, what is your level of confidence that the GOP in Oregon might see some gains in the legislature through the elections this fall?
We're very confident with a lot of things going on. You know, one House bill I probably should mention here was 1554 that I was part of getting an outside agency to do a review of all the executive orders that came out of the governor's office on the pandemic. So, you know, we did a lot of things that were claimed to be based on science, and we want to take a look back at that from that perspective. But I think more generally, a lot of people have a lot of questions of, you know, where was the leadership's, you know, political leadership, the majority leadership interest at heart? Was it really for the individuals, or, you know, was there some other agenda creeping into that? And so I think Oregonians generally are inclined to, you know, kind of fall back on their conservative roots and say, let's let a different party lead here. And so I think we will see significant gains, both House and the Senate. And I think we have an opportunity to take control in the Senate. We're going to work hard towards that.
Wow. That would be a big change for Oregon. And, of course, on the national landscape, that's projected through a change in a lot of congressional seats as well. So we'll see how that goes here in Oregon. Talk about the overall mood in the legislature. Is it improving or getting worse in terms of working across the aisle?
You know, those are relationships that we have up there. And I think what comes out sometimes is a little different than what actually happens in the building. There's, you know, press releases and talking points on certain sides of the aisle. But for me, and maybe it's because I work a lot in the healthcare policy, which isn't as controversial for me, it seemed pretty standard moving forward. We had a lot of policy bills that we moved out of there. We had a lot of funding allocation, particularly from the ARPA funds, to get addressed. We did have something new this time around where the capital construction allowed individual districts to drive some funds for their districts, the Senate and the House, what their district needs were. And so that was $100 million, a little different budgeting approach, which I think really is helpful at getting it down to the, you know, the level where those that represent those districts have a feeling for where some of those funds can best be spent. And so, you know, I think it was pretty standard fare there from the aspect of, you know, is there contention in the legislature? Sure, there always is. But we went through the process professionally and got it completed.
As you look ahead in your legislative work, what are some of the things you'll be addressing in the coming weeks?
So there's always task force. You get assigned a task force. I just got reached out by the Rayfield's office to ask me to be on a task force going forward. And so there's always task force that we have. When these wrap up, a lot of the bills don't actually do a policy, but they put a work group together or a task force together. So those are things that I'll be engaging in. One of them is with, again, healthcare policy. And as we come out of the pandemic on a national level, there's going to be some things different in the Medicaid population as far as redetermination is what they call it. And that can affect about 300,000 Oregonians. And so we're looking at how best to provide that service in conjunction with the Fed requirements. And so there's going to be a lot of work, particularly in that space.
And as you look ahead to the next legislative session, are there already things you're working on for that one?
Yeah, one of the ones that I mentioned was the vets getting some dental coverage here. And so we got some funding for it to get that program started to get through 2023. And so I'll be advocating for some long-term funding for that program and look for success in that area. There are, you know, kind of a handful of other things that we're going to be looking at towards our district. One of the things is within capital construction, particularly in the districts that we represent, how we can best serve. And I go to a lot of city council meetings to get input from those city managers on, you know, an example of Lowell and their parks and the grants that they're doing. So there's a lot of background work that goes into those budgetings. So we know where we can best spend those dollars. And so those are some of the priorities to make sure that not all the funds end up in metropolitan areas, that they get distributed on some sort of an equal basis to our smaller communities.
Final thought here, just looking at the landscape with 36 people running for governor, what are your thoughts about what's ahead for November?
Well, you know, we're going to come down to three candidates in the governor's race just because of the makeup of who's running and how they're affiliated with parties going forward. We don't know who those are going to be. I will say that I have endorsed my prior leader, Christine Drazen, and I wish her the best support and think she'd be a great candidate.
All right, State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, sir.
All right, 1259, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.